Mo, how are you and yours this week, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Hanging in there. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I know things in our respective provinces aren't going particularly well. How are the kids and the family handling it?
Well, it's time management is a skill the kids are learning. Schools have closed here in Alberta for grade 7 to 12. Kindergarten to 6 are still in class, so my kids are at home, and it's a battle over the Wi-Fi, getting on first to get the best signal, all that good stuff. But no, I mean it's different time again, in the world here, and it's just what you got to do. You got to roll with it, and you got to make the best of it, and you got to get through it. Really, that's the only way you can look at it.
Yeah, and try to help everybody else in the process. I agree with you. And knowing your personality, Mo, I think you're like that guy in that commercial that was out there recently where he sits down to watch the game, but then one of his kids wants to watch something, and then the wife comes in. She wants to be on a different screen. He ends up outside. I can just see you not getting the first Wi-Fi signal and looking around the house and saying, "All right, if you need me, I'll be out for a couple hours. I'll be out in the bush."
Well, exactly. That's even a better excuse to go out and go for a walk and get some fresh air. But honestly, man, where we live out here, our Wi-Fi is so sketchy. We don't have fiber optic. We don't have high speed. It is almost going back to like my college days of dial-up. It's brutal right now. But anyways, I guess that's first world problems, right? I mean, that's the way it is. We'll manage and we'll get through it.
I would love to hear that you are on dial-up. You sound like somewhat like Braden Holtby. Like Braden Holtby barely has a cell phone, and the cell phone he has, he and Jay Beagle, they've got like these Nokia old cell phones, and you can barely ever get a hold of them. And they have to text with the three different taps to get a certain letter on one of the numbers on the phone. Is that what you're describing to me here?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Those flip phones too, though. I remember sitting on the bus years ago, and at that time, I mean, we didn't have games like we have today on our phones. But the big game back then on the bus was, and you might recall it, Scotty, on those old Nokia phones was Chase the Snake. You remember that game,
Yep.
Chase
Oh, yeah.
the Snake? And guys, that was the best game going forever. It was like, oh man, it was. If you look back at it now, our kids must have thought, Jesus, that's archaic. But anyways, that was the big hit back then, Chase the Snake. And now I couldn't even tell you what they're doing, but a lot different than back then, that's for sure.
Well, I can tell you this. Here's a parenting hack. I mentioned this a long time ago, but I'll mention it again because not everybody throws out their old phones. They just throw them in a drawer somewhere and they'll get to them one day. Like when my kids were real young, we would just give them those as phones. Like there's no battery in them or anything like that, but there are my kids rolling around with like a Motorola flip phone, a Motorola Razr, and thinking that they've got their own phone.
Well, that's a good way to fool them, right? They start them, got to start them humble, right? And this, they don't have all the luxuries of the instant access that all these kids have today. So I guess it's not a bad idea.
Nope, it worked out for us. Brendan Morrison joining us here, dialing in on his rotary phone today as we connect across the Rockies. I'm interested to know this. We're talking about Gary Bettman today, and I've asked our listeners, how did you see Gary Bettman over your life as a hockey fan? How do you see him now? Go back to when you were playing, Mo. How did you view Gary Bettman when you were a player?
Well, I think when you're a player, I mean, he's kind of like the enemy, essentially, right? Even though, I mean, it sounds so counterintuitive because, essentially he's the guy in charge of the CEO of running a multi-billion dollar business, and you really want him, on your side and working with you to grow the business. And but as a player, I mean, it's like anything. It's like he kind of he, when you sometimes when you have labor disagreements, or then you kind of just see them as the opposition, right? I mean, that's just naturally the way it is. But I think as I've kind of gotten out of the game a bit now, and have retired, and you've seen what Gary's track record has been since when he took over, and when he came over from the NBA, and what he's done as far as growing the league by adding teams and increasing franchise value, and in turn growing revenues for the NHL and increasing player salaries. I mean, he's done a tremendous job. a tremendous job. And it's just, I don't know, it's just something about the personality of him. I've never had much any interaction with Gary directly one-on-one. I've been in a room with him before, but it just seems, you know, his personality, I don't know, it just seems very warm and fuzzy. But anybody who's ever had direct interaction with him or talked to him said the man is brilliant and is a good guy.
I've sat in studio with him. I've seen him a couple of different times off radio as well. And you're right. That's how he comes across. And I do believe that he's worked on that over the years, Mo. But just to go back to your time as a player, before we get to where he's at now, it sounds to me, and this is what I assume, because most players don't get direct interaction with them, you were just seeing what the rest of us were seeing when Bettman would speak or Bettman would do an interview. And he does it far less now, but he used to come across with a very condescending tone, smartest guy in the room. Why are you even bothering to ask me that question? And that's kind of the perception, it sounds to me, like players got of him as well as fans.
Well, you're right. And again, that's just taking short snippets of what he's doing, right, essentially. But again, if you look at his track record, how he's growing this business, and, you know, as a player, you know, look at how salaries have escalated. As owners, look at how franchise values have escalated. I mean, he's done a good job. There's no question about it. But you're right. Just doesn't seem personable, even when he comes across on, you know, the short snippets that he has, you know, whether it's on TV or radio. I mean, and he doesn't get, you know, it's always funny to me when he comes out at the end of the year and presents the Stanley Cup compared to, you know, other commissioners. And he's always gets just booed so bad. I was wondering last year when they presented the cup if they were going to have like a taping of boos when he came out in the bubble there in Edmonton, but they never did, right? It was pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, he hasn't really endeared himself to the fans. But I don't think he cares about that. I mean, he cares about business and having a successful business. And if you look at it strictly from that point of view, he's done a good job.
Yeah, he has done a very good job overall. And I think most people who take the time to look at that would agree. And we wouldn't have felt that way 7-8 years ago when the league was going through a lockout. But not only has he changed the way he presents things, Mo, I think he's gained some perspective along the way as well. And I think the general hockey fan, look, I know there's some people who are never going to be on board with Gary Bettman. You don't have to be. But I think the general hockey fan has been able to separate who he is from what he does. And what he has done, it hasn't always come across as palatable to a hockey fan, but the greater good has ultimately been served here.
Yeah, you're right. And I do think even over the course of his tenure, maybe what put some fans off, or, you know, there has been, you know, multiple work stoppages or labor disputes, and you know, that's not endearing to fans, right? When you're the guy kind of essentially, you know, running the ship here, steering the ship. I mean, I do understand that, you know, there's the player side and the owner side, and you got to have both sides work together in order to get something done. Yes, that's clear. So, but I wonder sometimes if maybe that's part of the reason why fans don't have a warm welcome for him when they see him or when he's out in public or whatever. But again, just talking strictly business, I mean, he's done a phenomenal job.
Well, and I would throw this to you and the listeners as well. You can text us at 960, 960 or 650, 650 throughout the course of the show. I feel like in the last few years, the booing when he awards the Stanley Cup, it's just become tradition as opposed to where it was before, where there was a little bit of venom behind it.
Yeah, that's probably true. You know, I do think there's some substance behind that statement, Scotty, for sure. Now I think it's almost like this running joke, right? When he comes out, let's just give it to him. Just give it to him, let him hear it, whether that's truly how people feel or not. I mean, it is. I find it funny, though. I do.
And he's a guy who gets the deal done. It's why I think they're going to play in 2021, Mo. It's no longer 2020, 2021. I think they'll be back on the ice at some point in January. Maybe it gets pushed in to early February. But he's a guy who gets done what needs to be done. And ultimately, on the player side and the owner side, I think the one thing they agree on right now is that we are going to have to play. We might not like the financial terms that we ultimately get to, but at the end of the day, we still have to strike a deal here because it's too costly for everybody if we don't.
Well, I just think the NHL will get absolutely hammered here if they don't get something going here fairly quickly. Just look at what the NBA is doing. I mean, they're starting here in 3 weeks on Christmas Day, and essentially both seasons finished at the same time. You know, I just think it would be very, very difficult or, you know, tough on NHL to go down that road of not starting. And, you know, I get there's a lot of moving parts here and owners, you know, they want to renegotiate the deal that was just agreed upon, or the extension that was just agreed upon here. You know, revenues are going to be down tremendous, like huge, huge amounts. I mean, ticket sales result in almost 60% of hockey-related revenue. And when you can't sell tickets and put seats in the stands, obviously your revenues are going down significantly. So, but the other thing, like we've talked about previously, is, you know, their TV deal is up, and if they want to, you know, have some leverage at all to renegotiate a stronger deal than what they currently have in place with NBC, they have to play. I mean, they have to.
Damn, both sides need that. It's 50-50 split now with hockey-related revenue. Brendan Morrison joining us, as he does here every single Thursday, former Canuck, former Flame, among other teams. So the thought of Gary Bettman being a strong negotiator, ultimately getting a deal done, popped into my head, and I wanted to hear from you. There's lots of strong negotiators around hockey. There's lots of great agents who advocate for their clients, and there's Donald Fehr and Bob Goodenow. Go down the list of people you've been around throughout your hockey world, Mo. If I said to you, you can have anybody in the hockey world to negotiate a deal for you, who would you want that person to be?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, I'm going to have to say my agent, who Kurt Overhart, but if I can't, you know, say him, there's a bunch of guys. I mean, man, I mean, Gary would be up on that list there. Donald Fehr, look at his track record, what he's done with the Baseball Players Association, now with the Hockey Players Association. You know, him coming over and implementing the pension plans in place now has been a huge win for the players. But, you know, I've got a lot of experience with this guy here, but Berkey, he's a pretty tough customer, right? But, you know, the one guy who I would probably pick that would stand out in my mind if I had to pick one guy would probably be my first general manager, and that would be Lou Lamoriello.
I wish you could see the paper beside me right now. I literally wrote down the name Lou as I asked you the question. I think he's going to get back to Lou. Those guys are tough, man, but there's a different vibe with that cat, isn't there?
Man, like he's like the godfather, man. Like, and he has the ultimate respect, I think, of, you know, a lot of people in the hockey world, right? Like he's kind of like the model guy on how to run things, right? Business-wise. Frugal in the sense that, you know, he grinds and has a tough bargain, but also he understands the intricacies of, you know, making sure the players are taken care of, you know, away from the rink, you know, hotels, meals, just their dealings, right? So they can just focus on being at their absolute best when the time comes to play. Like, you just minimize distractions. Like, he's the ultimate at doing that.
The other thing that strikes me about Lamoriello, and this is just my perception and anecdotes that I've heard from guys like yourself, like all the other guys you mentioned, Burke, even Bettman, Fehr, they all lose their cool at some point in time, right? Like, somebody gets under their skin and they'll fire something back, whatever their reflex is in their defense mechanisms. Lamoriello strikes me as one of those guys that, you know, you always said this about your parents, like if they're yelling, you know they're mad, but if they're not saying anything and they're just staring at you, then that's a worst case scenario and you know it's going to go full tilt. Lamoriello strikes me as one of those dudes.
Man, he's got ice running in his veins, right? Like he never shows what's up his sleeve. I mean, I could go on and on telling you stories about him. I mean, I remember one time a teammate of mine, Sheldon Surrey, he was a younger single guy in New Jersey, a couple years younger than me. And he would always have run-ins with Lou, or Lou would always be monitoring him about what he's up to and doing. And Sheldon said, he said one day Lou called him in his office and he was telling us after, and he's like, you know, he'd been out in the city or whatever. And, And Lou called him in, and he said, sat him down, and he just said to him, like, is there anything you have to tell me? And Shelley just looked at him and said, no. And then he said he stared at him for like 45 minutes. Not a word was said between the two. And then he said, okay, you can leave now. Like, just the mind games, right? Like, in the just knowing that he won't crack, he won't break. And, oh, man, he's legendary.
Well, and those are the people who scare you a little more. The people who either get the dead eyes when they're looking at you like that, or they get the crazy eyes. One of those two. And you know internally, I can't go to that place. Like, that's not a place I can go, and I'm really frightened right now.
Wow. It's exactly it, right? Like, you don't know what is going to flip the switch or not. And, you know, I've seen him get a little bit heated, you know, with my experiences there when I actually, you know, I had an incident where I didn't have a contract signed and before training camp, and I wanted to come to camp without a deal, and he told me I couldn't do that. So I went over to the Czech Republic for a month. I came back, and at that point in time, I kind of knew in my mind that, you know, if I wanted out of New Jersey, I would have to ask for a trade, which is, man, even to this day, thinking about it, I kind of get the cold sweats because I signed my contract, and I remember him, you know, basically patting me on the back and telling me I'm a good kid and let's put this behind us. You're getting bad advice. Well, as he's saying this, I know in my mind, well, I still have to tell him I want him to trade me. So it was the most uncomfortable moment of my life, probably. So he finishes saying all that, and I kind of stuttered, like, you know, Mr. Lamoriello, you know, I just want to let you know that I don't think that you were honest with me in this entire process. And if you have the chance to move me, I would like you to do that. And his face lit up like a Christmas tree. Like, he went like redder than red, smoke coming out his ears. And I crawled out of his office that day. Like, literally, I was afraid to go back to the rink to the next day. I was so scared. But, oh, man, good times.
I'm sure you didn't know if you were going to get out of that room that day. But having gone through it, you probably like a week later or a couple months later realized, dude, I survived that. I'm not scared of anything ever again. Nothing will intimidate me now that I've been through that and survived.
Well, I mean, that was pretty much right at the pinnacle, right? Like, at the peak, you're right. I mean, I know for sure I've never been in another situation as uncomfortable as that. You know, maybe another time that year when we had another discussion about him moving me and him telling me, move you, there has to be another team in the league that wants you. Like, literally, no lie. That's what he told me. So I crawled out of his office again. But, yeah, some good times, good memories.
Thanks for the conversation, Mr. Lamoriello. I'm hoping I can pick up my dignity in about a week.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Lionel, thank you. May I please have another?
Now I know why you laughed things off in that arbitration meeting with the Canucks and Burke was in there. You were like, man, this is child's play. I've hung with Lou Lamoriello, dude. Like, what you're saying about the mouse and the elephant, that's comical to me, buddy.
Well, that was comical. Like, I literally was biting my cheek and staring down at my feet because I didn't want to laugh out loud. I thought it would be disrespectful to the arbitrator in the room.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. Like, oh, you experience a lot of things. And I think a lot of it comes down to your demeanor. Like, so many things, guys, can be taken to heart and really take them personal and really get you down. But, you know, I've always used things like that as a motivating tool, to be honest with you. Like, you know, you don't think that anybody wants me? Okay, I'm going to show you somebody wants me. Or you don't think that I can, you know, carry my weight with certain guys? Well, yes, I can. I'm going to prove it to you. So I've always kind of, you know, reverse psychology that and flipped it into a motivational thing.
Well, Mo, I really appreciate you bringing a little levity onto the program today. There's a lot of people out there. As you said, things can get you down, and there's a lot of people going through that. And many of our listeners jump in because they like to hear stories like that, put a smile on their face, and you did that again today. Thanks for the perspective. Always appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll do this again next week.
Yeah, buddy. Awesome. You too. Have a great weekend there.